Everything we know about the Capital One breach, WPA3 is still vulnerable to hacks, and U.S. utility companies are targeted in attacks. All that coming up now on ThreatWire. Greetings, I am Shannon Morris, and this is ThreatWire for August 6, 2019, your summary of the threats to our security, privacy, and internet freedom. It's time for a quick shout out, and this one goes out to George, Graham, Ray, Alex, Eric, Mike in Texas, Kevin, Ben, Andy, Karit, Eric, Corgitronics.com, Thomas, Samuel, Ecliptics, Patrick, Tagno25, and Needs More RAM, who joined the Patreon team this week. If you are interested in supporting ThreatWire over on Patreon, hit up patreon.com/threatwire. And just a heads up, if you are going to DEF CON in Las Vegas this weekend, Hack5 is having a meetup. Yay! Come join us for some good conversation, some good beer, and bar games over at this place called Beer Park. It's located right in front of Paris Casino and Resort on Friday, August 9th at 9 p.m. So that's Friday, August 9th, 9 p.m., Beer Park. We didn't book the bar, so go to their website to reserve a table for you and your friends, or just plan to walk around and mingle. That's totally fine too. I hope you can make it because I will have a very limited supply of some ThreatWire stickers that I will be giving away. And now, onto the news. Capital One announced a data breach early last week in which a since-arrested hacker gained access to data that was stored on a server with a configuration vulnerability. Specifically, the hacker exploited a misconfigured web application firewall on the company's AWS cloud server. Capital One fixed the vulnerability and worked with law enforcement to find the attacker. Now, there is no proof showing that the data was ever used for fraudulent reasons, though the investigation is ongoing. This breach affected about 100 million customers in the US and 6 million in Canada. No credit card numbers or login credentials were obtained, but names, addresses, phone numbers, email addresses, date of birth, self-reported income were all stolen in the breach. Some customers' data, such as credit scores, limits, balances, and payment history and contact information, were obtained along with fractions of transaction data as well. About 140,000 Social Security numbers were stolen, and about 80,000 bank account numbers. 1 million Canadian Social Security numbers were also compromised, and the stolen data was decrypted, so they did have full access. Now, the hack happened on March 22nd and 23rd, but Capital One found out about the breach on July 19th, 2019, when a security researcher notified them through their responsible disclosure email address. Now, I would like to mention, while the company does have an email address set up for these kind of notifications, they do not, in fact, offer any kind of reward or compensation for security researchers' hard day's work. Had they actually had a reward or some kind of compensation, maybe the hack wouldn't have happened in that way. The attacker was Paige Thompson, 33, who goes by Erratic online. She was arrested and charged with computer fraud and abuse, so she faces up to $250,000 in fines, plus up to 5 years in jail. Her hearing was on August 1st. She had admitted to stealing the files via Twitter DMs and online posts, but was also tied to IP addresses. Now, while she did claim to have hacked several other businesses according to Slack messages to peers, this is not entirely certain at this time, though the Justice Department has stated that she may face other charges, though. Now, Thompson is not the only one facing fines. Capital One and GitHub are both facing class action lawsuits over the hack for not protecting the data in the first place. Capital One for the breach, and GitHub for allowing that data to be posted on their website. There is proof showing that the attacker posted details on GitHub, so it was publicly accessible for over 3 months, but GitHub claims that this data was only details about the hack, not the data from the actual hack. They could be sued for $5 million. Now, of course, Capital One is deeply sorry for what happened, and of course, they are working to make it right. How many times have we heard that from companies? They are offering free credit monitoring and identity protection, and of course, it is recommended to freeze your credit if you have that option, and be wary of phishing schemes or scams. Now, even if you don't have a Capital One account, if you applied for a card anytime since 2005, you may have been affected. Way back in April, two security researchers reached out to the Wi-Fi Alliance about a group of vulnerabilities which they called Dragon Blood, which affect WPA3 by enacting a denial of service attack, two downgrade attacks, and two side channel information leaks. WPA3 is the next generation of wireless protocol, which will include better simplicity while also improving upon the cryptography and security of WPA2, which we all know is not very secure. But that does not mean that it's without its faults. The Dragon Blood vulnerabilities rely on WPA3's new handshake authentication standard called SAE, or Simultaneous Authentication of Equals, dubbed Dragonfly. These same researchers also found the crack attack in WPA2, so they have had experience when it comes to wireless security research. The Wi-Fi Alliance fixed the WPA3 Dragon Blood flaws via software updates on impacted devices rather quickly, but that was not the end of the story. The same researchers, Matthew Van Hoth and E.L. Ronan, found two new bugs that also affect WPA3. While the Wi-Fi Alliance did update security recommendations for vendors back in April to secure against Dragon Blood, those updates came with their own flaws. These would allow attackers to leak information from the protocol and also brute force a Wi-Fi network's password. Yikes. Bug number one is CVE-2019-13377, which occurs during the handshake between WPA3 devices. Users authenticate using the Dragonfly Key Exchange, which is simply put an updated encrypted form of authentication. These use two different kinds of elliptic curves, which are used to randomize the encryption. The first one was P521, which had the Dragon Blood vulnerability, so the Wi-Fi Alliance told vendors to use BrainPool elliptic curves instead. Unfortunately, BrainPool also has a flaw which allows for side channel leaks of data that allowed the researchers to brute force the password. Bug number two is CVE-2019-13456, which impacts the authentication system that was originally used in WPA and WPA2, which is called EAP-PWD, which stands for Extensible Authentication Protocol. Now, since this was brought over to WPA3 for legacy usage, it is also included here. Now, this bug allows for an information leak in much the same way, but only affects free radius supported devices. Again, these could let an attacker grab the Wi-Fi password for an authenticated network. Now, this update is not backwards compatible, so any current deployments of WPA3 will likely have to upgrade to WPA 3.1 to be secure. Both of the researchers adamantly criticized the Wi-Fi Alliance for not allowing the open source community to help combat vulnerabilities, keeping any development under a closed standard. This means, with less eyes, the standard made it to market with multiple vulnerabilities when it could have been secured much earlier if a large community was working on it together. Before we hit story number three, I wanted to say thank you so much to my supporters. For a limited time, and that limited time deadline is coming up very quickly, anyone who joins my team of supporters will get a personalized thank you video sent directly to you from me. Also, I decided I want to start a security and privacy audio podcast. It's going to be my first audio podcast as a part of the ThreatWire feed. That is my next Patreon goal, so if you want to help, check out my community. The link is in the description below. And also a huge thanks to our Hush Puppy perk level patrons for sending in their fur baby or wing feather baby photos. I love them, so keep them coming. Attackers targeting industrial control systems, or ICS for short, is becoming a day-to-day occurrence this year and has affected companies worldwide. A new report by security company Proofpoint shows that three U.S. utility companies were targeted in attacks last month between July 19th through 25th, all of which seem to be from the same perpetrator. The companies were not named in Proofpoint's report, but each had an employee who received emails claiming to be from the National Council of Examiners for Engineering and Surveying. And these were phishing emails that looked real, which stated that the receiver did not pass their examination and included a result notice.doc Word doc attached. Malicious macros in the doc would attempt to install malware upon opening. According to the report, this malware included a remote access Trojan module and a mechanism for command and control communication. The malware, which Proofpoint dubbed lookback could kill processes, execute CMD commands with executables, find, read, delete, and execute files, enumerate, start, and delete services, take screenshots, remove itself, shut down, or reboot the computer. It avoided detection by camouflaging itself as an open source updater for Notepad++, of all things, and using a dynamic link library that looked legitimate. Proofpoint blocked the attacks and does not believe any of the industry networks were infected. They have not been able to find a source, and as such, they also do not know where the emails came from, but they do believe it to be state-sponsored due to the overlaps with previous state-sponsored attacks. In regards to the National Council of Examiners, the NCEES, they do not notify test takers via email about their results. The council also posted a bulletin on their website alerting others about the phishing attempts. And with that, do not forget to like and subscribe, and let me know what you think of all these stories down below in the comment section. I am Shannon Morris, and I will see you on the internet. We'll be right back.